right. This is the microphone, and yes, it is definitely on because I'm getting good levels. All right, we're going to leave this go, and we're going to go to YouTube now. All right. Oh, fuck, I just don't. Hello, how are you? How is everybody? Here we are in our studio. Well, in the studio at WEUR Radio, I am doing a live broadcast because WEUR claims that I did not pay my October bill, which of course I paid my bill. And anyway, very unprofessional people contacted me last night about this, and I've been sending emails and proof and everything back and forth. But I walked in today, the engineer who's on duty, the poor engineer said, I need a check from you. And I said, I don't have a check for you. I don't carry checks around. Anyway, long story short, they said, well, you can't go on the air. So we're not on the radio, but guess what? We're on YouTube. So I have guests here today, and I'm so excited. And I don't know if I would even bother doing this if I didn't have guests, but I do have guests. It makes me so happy. I have John. You know what? Everybody's in chairs with wheels. This is fantastic. So as I say your name, roll over. Here is John Devitt.
Hello, everybody.
You gotta look right there.
I did. Enough of me.
John Devitt. Paul, come over.
Hi.
Good morning. Paul Dowling of Irish Community Services. John Devitt, we didn't say, is with Gaelic Park. Richie, come on over.
Hi, how are you? Richie Figures.
He'll be hearing from Richie because he wrote this. Oh, you know, we can show the book.
Ah.
Look at that. He wrote this book. It's called Cry of the People Gone. You'll be hearing from him. And who else do we have? None other than Miss Bridget. So what you can do if you want... I can't play music with this because we're not doing a radio broadcast, and it'd be kind of silly for me to, we talked about this around our table here, it would be kind of silly for me to use my phone, my Spotify account to play music and hold up the microphone so you guys can hear it. You can play your own music. I think you generally tune into our show for the chat anyway, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to chat. So, first up, I have Mr. John Devitt. He is with me from Gaelic Park. And you know what? I'm going to have you come around this side because this is where the microphone is. John, here, watch yourself. Don't trip. This is real. This is live, kids. This is me pivoting to because of these circumstances that we're in. So, John Devitt, I heard you on the Hegarty Show, and I thought, why didn't this guy go into politics? There was not a breath between words. You said you had like four or five stories all strung together, and seriously, not a breath. You were so good. Your breath control is fantastic, and no hesitation, no nothing.
Well, Siobhan, we're a lot alike. The plan is there is no plan. So we operate great under pressure, you know, so.
You just show up, baby.
Just show up.
Just show up.
And that's, Roma, my wife always says that I got on the wrong line. I got two mouths and one ear, you see. So my listening skills are not great, but my talking skills are excellent.
I think your listening skills are just fine.
Yeah.
You've got some big stuff going on at Gaelic Park this weekend.
Yeah, if you heard that.
Well, not just this weekend. Yeah. You've had a lot going on.
Well, we're so grateful for our support. Like, you know, it's...
And listen, talk about pivoting. What Gaelic Park has had to do in the last... When did this start? 2019? With the pandemic shutting down, all those barrels of Guinness had to be tossed out because St. Patrick's Day was canceled. Going from that to what's happening now, amazing.
Well, just like your radio show, and you're pivoting right now. So, I mean, you have to... I mean, it is... It
your
is,
role.
Yeah, our volunteers and our supporters... I mean, we've built a new beer garden. When COVID,
I haven't been there yet. Yeah. I've heard it's gorgeous.
When COVID started, I mean, we had the property in front that's been there, a one-acre piece that there was a home on that we rented out for several years. And some of us always felt that we didn't present the building very well. So, and between donations and our volunteer force, we turned that one-acre piece into a volunteer field.
Is the parking lot, I mean, is the...
It's right beside, it's in between the two parking lots.
Oh, it's in between the two. Oh, okay.
And again, it was a great thing because it gave our volunteers something to strive for. I mean, there was nothing happening, weddings, the building was closed, we were serving food out the back door for pickup. So it was a tough time for everybody, but everybody rallied around this, and it's turned out to be beautiful. And then, of course, we built the beer garden this past winter and this year, and it looks like there was a master plan in place and everything kind of ties in. But that wasn't true. But again, I mean... I mean, the GA had a great summer, and the reason I say that is because we depend so much on them for our volunteer force.
Yeah.
I mean, they started Gailey Park, and the GA is such a powerful entity in Ireland, and it's based on volunteerism. Like, you know, that's the strongest.
Well, the players are not paid.
No, the players are not paid, no. I mean, there are some. We can talk through both sides of our mouth.
We're not going to go. We're not going to go through that whole thing because there's been a lot of controversy about that. A lot of players get endorsements and money. I have no problem with that. But yes, the GAA.
I don't have a problem with that either.
The GAA is all volunteer run.
It is. And it's during COVID in Ireland, I mean, they played such an important role because, I mean, Paul here with Irish Immigration would understand that there were so many older people that were by themselves or couldn't pick up
isolated.
Food. And the GAA kicked in every community in Ireland, and they made sure that people that were in need or people that that couldn't get out, like, you know, that there were someone visiting them or there was someone bringing them the necessary
stuff. Really? The GAA did that
in every community in Ireland.
Really?
Every community.
Oh, did you know that, Rachel?
Food on wheels.
That was GAA sponsored. What? That wasn't the government, or did the government provide the food and then the GAA distributed?
No, they were the people who were even paying for the food, but in terms of picking up and delivering it.
Right. Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is the GAA in most rural communities in Ireland, even the city of Dublin, is the heart and soul of the community because they're the meeting place. Families get together from grandparents to fathers and mothers and younger children, both boys and girls. So again, it's a vital part of Gailey Park too, you know. So
sure. Oh, it's very important, Gailey Park and the Heritage Centre.
So during COVID, when we had something to rally around, and it kind of gave people a purpose and a goal that we are going to get through this. So instead of saving money, we were spending money.
Well, you had to spend money to make money.
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't that the thought process?
It is. So, I mean, and now this year, with everybody coming back and us hosting NACB playoffs and the CYC playoffs, I mean, it all came to fruition. We get them every 5 years, and we had them both this year. But it's such a wonderful venue, and we can host things like that seamlessly because we have the grounds, and we have the buildings, and we have the staff, and we have the volunteers and the GAA. So, I mean, all together, when they all work together, it's a powerful force. And that's what Gaelic Park is. It's a powerful force. We've come through COVID, and we see people coming back, and we're very excited about that.
And you have a lot going on. I mean, you had to obviously suspend the Memorial Day Festival for the last few years. Is that back on the books for next year, or is it going to be a bit different?
August. It'll be a bit different.
Well, you know, it's not a bad idea, because May is a tough, tough month. Some days are beautiful. You get a day like today, which is 70-something degrees in the middle of October, but other times you get cold, pouring down. And I know you provide for all that, but I think it makes it a lot harder.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes change is a good thing, and we fought Memorial Weekend for many years, and unfortunately we had the name and the south side of it's going to rain because Gailey Park Irish Festival. And there was some good years weather-wise, and we always made it work anyway, as you say, but I think people are excited for a change, like, you know. The other part of it too, though, is that, you know,
it's an opportunity to change.
Yeah,
right, because you haven't had it for the couple of years anyway.
Well, again, another thing that's happened the last several years is the Irish Fest in all the different cities in the Midwest, from Minnesota to Kansas to Dayton to Dublin, Ohio, to Milwaukee, of course, which we all know is the biggest Irish fest in the U.S. The bands and the groups that come from Ireland, they kind of have an 8-week, 10-week window when they come here.
Yeah, they're festivaling everywhere they go.
So May is too soon.
Yeah.
We're out of the... We're kind of bringing in a standalone
band. Oh, that's an interesting thing.
Now we're kind of joining the rest of the parade, like, you know, so where they come and we can...
Festival season.
So that's a good thing.
It makes things easier in many ways. So not just the weather, but the procuring the entertainment.
Yeah, because...
And the more variety of entertainment, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it gets you to the bigger bands, like, you know, because it's very, very hard to afford them for a standalone event in May where they're just coming for your festival.
Right.
Whereas when they're in the States for 8-10 weeks...
They're here already.
They're here, you know.
They rented a van, and they're traveling around.
So the logistics of it make more sense, you know.
Yes, exactly. That's interesting.
So another point, too, that people forget is that a lot of our older Irish population, which we all are, but, I mean, we haven't had too many young people come the last 25 years, but, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, they have summer homes in Michigan or Wisconsin, like, you know, so Memorial Weekend is the weekend they want to head off for their first day at the summer home. That's it. So we lose out on that crowd, too, on Memorial Weekend. You know?
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
Anyway, we don't know if this is going to work, but we're willing to change and give it a shot.
All right. Well, this is the first I've heard of it, so I'm excited about that. But Gaelic Park also has some wonderful entertainment coming up here very very soon. Nathan Carter is coming back to town. He's got one sold-out show. I was there. Were you there at the Copernicus Center when he first came?
I think I was, yeah.
Yeah. So Nathan Carter came to Chicago. How many years ago was that?
I think it's probably 6 or 7 years
ago. Yeah. And they rented out the Copernicus Center, which is a smaller theater owned by the Polish National Alliance, I think. And just like our Heritage Center with its theater, they were able to rent that out. And it was only about half full, maybe. Nathan Carter wasn't a big name then. He wasn't a big name then, but I saw him. I saw him first time he came to Chicago and performed, and now he's selling out shows.
He's selling out shows. Yeah, he's... The musicians have had a real tough time the last...
Oh, my gosh, so hard.
I mean, anyone in the entertainment business, and I mean, really good songs, you know, so...
Yeah.
But he's back. I mean, I saw him in Clonmany in August this year. There's a festival in Clonmany in Donegal, and the place, it was a brutal night, raining, but the place was full. So he's definitely established himself as a major force, like, you know. We sold out his first show in 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah, I know. Without
any advertising, basically, you know. So now we added a second show, and there's still tickets available for the second show on Tuesday, November 15th. So we're excited, because I think we're going to get close to selling that one out, too.
Yeah.
So.
Tuesday, November 15th.
Yeah, second show.
Second show. Still a few tickets available.
Still a few tickets available. And then we have this Christmas Celtic Angels coming in December 10th. December 10th is a Saturday night, and they are an ensemble of 15. There's five singers. You'll see their photograph there front and center and all the advertising, but there's actually five dancers and five band members also, so it's a 15-person show production. And that should be a good... It'll have a Christmas flavor to it, an Irish Christmas flavor to it, and that's December 10th. And, of course, our Super Fundraiser is coming up on December 4th, and we have our Carrick 5K Run coming up. You know, Carrick 5K Run is something that Kelly Parr Charities benefit from, because all the money that's received that goes above and beyond the expenses goes to Kelly Parr Charities. And last year we had 450 people.
Wow.
Running and walking on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. And unlike other events where a lot of people that come are runners or they're walkers.
Right.
But we bring them into the building afterwards, give them soup and rolls and bananas and oranges and have presentations. And there's a great family atmosphere. And so it's become
a
standalone event, a tradition. Yeah. It's been going on about 10 years.
10 years.
And so, you know, it's I think it's open right now for entry. I think an individual entry is $30. But, I mean, it's all the proceeds go to the, the charitable arm of Getty Park. And talking about the charitable arm, I've... putting my oar in the water again with this genealogy event coming up November 6th.
Well, okay, so tell me about this. I heard you talking about it on the Hegarty Show, and you were saying you went down the deep, dark rabbit hole of trying to, not your roots, because you know, but your wife's roots.
My wife's roots. Well, let's go back to my mother's roots first. She's a Costello from Roscommon.
Okay.
And that's your neck of the woods.
Right.
O'Connor is the predominant name in Roscommon when it
right.
comes to genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the Costellos, going back 200 years ago, would have been working on the land that the O'Connors owned. You know?
Not my O'Connors. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be us.
Well, I'm not going to get into that. That's what I mean. I'm just going to show people how to negotiate the different avenues.
Sorry.
And sites that are out there.
Jeez. Sorry. My husband calling to find out what the hell's going on. Sorry.
So it's become very interesting for me, and just like this gentleman over here wrote the book, Mr. Pickett, like, you know, you become passionate about certain things, and therefore, even though you're...
It takes on a life of its own,
takes on a
it?
Life of its own. And
you
the proceeds, it's $10 admission, but the proceeds is going to Getty Park Charities.
Who's coming to do this
I am.
For you? You're doing it.
I'm presenting it.
Because you have the experience now.
Because I know enough to be dangerous.
The ins and the outs. Yes.
Well, I've done it for the last couple of years, you know, and I've had to negotiate the sites mainly because of Roma's, you know, heritage in Donegal, which is very difficult because she comes from a peninsula which is, of course, surrounded on three sides by water. So.
Well, you'd think it would be easier if it was kind of a contained population.
Not really, because you have cousins marrying cousins and... You know, so you have the same names predominant throughout everything, like, you know. So.
That dowry was shared many, many times.
So people didn't travel much to marry going back 100, 150
years. Sure, they didn't have the resources,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, Paul would probably could speak on this subject better than I could. But
could you, Paul?
We didn't marry our cousins. Generally frowned upon in Wexford. I'm the rabbit hole now.
You're in such trouble.
Dig yourself out of that one.
Well, it's not so much cousins marrying cousins as that the same names keep coming up all the time.
Sure.
Like Doherty's,
sure.
McLaughlin's.
Different arms of the same family.
So therefore, when you're trying to differentiate between them, it's a task. Mm. You know, because if I type in, say, the year 1910, like, you know, and I type in Patrick McLaughlin, in his own, which is just a small part of Donegal, 110 names will come up.
110 names.
So therefore,
just a teeny tiny
and
report.
I don't have enough information, so I have to go through all 110 entries to find the one I'm looking for.
And that's where the rabbit hole is.
That's where. So there's other information on a birth cert or marriage cert that people don't know about. It'd be the witnesses, you know, the people who actually were the witness to it, or the priest, like, you know, or give the father's name also on the birth certificate.
What,
so that's always.
All right, but the witnesses, what do they have to do with anything? Are they just because you think they might be relatives?
Well, yeah, they might be relatives. Generally, most times they are, you know. So therefore, you've got another name to go detective on. Mm-hmm. There's also some great sites like Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty.org, which is a free site, which you punch in a name, say like Andrew McLaughlin, Roma's grandfather, who came to Butte, Montana in 1910.
Right.
Now it'll give me the ship name and when he, what, how
it's a really fascinating resource. I've used that myself for the ship registry for the Ellis Island.
Yeah.
It's really quite amazing what you can find there.
It is, and what you can find around it is detective work again, is generally if you look through the passenger list for everybody arriving that same ship, people from Wexford that all have arrived at the same time. So four people might have come from Buncloddy.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to figure that they're either friends or related, right?
Right.
So that's giving you a hint. And it's a bit of detective work involved again, but you just got a serious hint because they all came with the same boat.
Right.
So, I mean, that's chances are they were either related or friends.
The ship manifest, though, can be a problem only because the people who wrote the manifest, who wrote down the passengers, were misspelling the names, abbreviating names, and being very creative with the way that they felt it should be spelled. Maybe they were spelling it phonetically even.
Well, that happens a lot. Yeah. I've got one cousin that I touched base with in New York. Her name was Duggan, D-U-G-G-A-N, but people in America say Dugan. So now she spells her name D-U-G-A-N.
Oh, yeah.
So, and as you say, when people arrive in New York and they say, what's your name? Mike Moran. Well, people in America would say Moran.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden then, after a number of years here, Irish people even would change the spelling themselves because people are pronouncing their name a different way. So, I mean, there's all these things come into play when you're doing the genealogy. And it can be, some people might say it's very boring, but I find it fascinating.
Oh, no, it's not. So, not at all. If you start researching, it's quite fascinating. So what is your role then? Are you a facilitator, would you say? Are you just sharing information? Are you bringing in, say, Quentin Burroughs from Ancestry and saying, hey, Quentin, we want to talk about the DNA piece of this, or no?
No, I think that a lot of the resources you will tap into are free online.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing what you're doing. I'm going to have my iPad in there, and I'm going to have the sites that I'm going to access on a big screen. I'm going to punch into them, and I'm going to show people how to physically negotiate through the records so they can get to the information they want to get to.
I see.
And I'm also going to give them the information of the sites they need to go to, such as the one I just described, which was the Ellis Island Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And 10 other sites you can hit on, like, you know. Because Ireland has made a tremendous commitment with the diaspora to try and facilitate them finding their roots, because it's good for tourism, Siobhan.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had the whole campaign about coming home.
The Gathering.
Yeah. That was, they even had a song done for it.
And then they had the Wild Atlantic Way, which has been an unbelievably successful tourism, you know, phenomenon the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, but some of that is dependent on the technology, too. I mean, before... I mean, the old joke about, you know, you ask someone in Ireland for directions and they say, well, you know, if I was going there, I wouldn't start here. No, you don't have to ask anyone anymore, you know. You have GPS, right? So
you
can punch in the address. So people now can find these out-of-the-way places. Because I know, Siobhan, when I'm talking to someone here that I'm trying to give good advice to going to Ireland, I always say, get off the main road. I mean, the Dingles and the Galways and the Cliffs of Moher, like, you know, I mean, they're all beautiful places, but the whole country is beautiful.
Yeah, the whole country.
You just have to have enough bravery to realize that if I get off the main road, I'm going to find something. You'll find a castle, I guarantee you, within 5 miles. You're going to find people who will sit down and talk to you. You'll find a good bar. You'll find a good restaurant. I mean, Irish food has really taken a tremendous leap forward.
Well, it's
John,
so fresh.
On that new thing now that you just get, each house has a number. And you plug in that number and you're brought straight to the door.
Oh, really? So it's not, they're not just
zip,
reading.
It's a zip code.
They're getting the zip code in Ireland now? That's amazing.
It's a zip code extension.
Extension.
You know where he has four numbers here after the first five numbers. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the same thing, Breeze. I'm glad you brought that up because GPS, all you do is plug it in and you can't get lost.
You can't get
lost. That is amazing.
Well, Mrs. Google might get you lost.
Yes. Google Maps is, she and I have a very contentious relationship.
Well, so do I.
I don't always agree with her at all.
No, I talk to her all the time.
Yes, I do too.
Not good.
Amazing. Ireland is totally amazing. And the food in Ireland is delicious. Any restaurant that I went into in the 6 days I was there, I had fish that were, you'd die for.
That's Breech Looney talking off camera here. Now we have to announce who's talking off camera. Because people are maybe watching us. Actually, I don't think anybody's watching us right now.
Well, the amazing thing is someone asked this morning about the mess in the UK right now. And I don't know how everyone else feels, but I feel like Ireland took a tremendous dive forward. I mean, we've got 14% non-nationals now.
Yeah.
And we've embraced them.
Yeah.
We've embraced our food. I mean, because that's why our food has improved so much.
Mm-hmm.
You can get Polish, Lithuanian food. You can get, Italian food.
Ukrainian food.
Whereas England is still looking backwards to try and go back to a time and place where they were before.
Well, yes,
and Ireland is looking forward, you know.
Yeah, England seems to like the purge. They want the purge.
In all the restaurants that we went to in Mayo and in Clare, bacon and cabbage was not on one of their menus. Not one.
Not one. All right. I have Maida Shugru, who just called in because I forgot to let her know about what's happening here. So, Richie, why don't you come on over? John, thank you so much. Have we hit everything you wanted to talk about?
Everything. Thank you very
everything
much.
And more. Yeah, everything and more.
And more.
And more. More. Tell me now, the genealogy thing is November
6th at 3 o'clock in the Celtic Room.
And what day of the week is November
6th?
It's a Sunday. Oh, perfect. All right.
Well, the Bears won't be any competition for me.
Right? Oh, indeed, no. Indeed, no. All right, so we have Richie Pickett coming on. As I said, this is really a talk show today. Oops. Oh, dear God. I think my fingers are so sweaty I can't dismiss anything. Oh, Richie. Swipe that.
Shibble. Which way it is anyway?
I don't know.
It looks as if it's locked.
Jesus God Almighty. Well, this is real live broadcast, whatever this is. Maida? Hello, darling. Hold on just a second. We've run into quite a hiccup today. The station is claiming I didn't pay my bill, which of course I did. So they're not allowing me to broadcast live. Via the radio waves, but I decided, Maida, that I would broadcast live via YouTube. So even though you're calling in on the phone, I'm going to have you on speaker. So you're actually going to be broadcasting on YouTube, not via the radio waves today. How do you like that? Yeah. And we'll have you on another time when we get this mess straightened out. But in the meantime, I'm going to put you on speaker now. So you're going to be on speaker and everybody who's in the studio. We are sitting in the radio studio. We are here. We are here, but we're just not broadcasting over the radio waves. We're broadcasting via YouTube. So we're actually internationally broadcasting right now to the entire world because YouTube reaches everybody. So I'm going to put you on speaker. No pressure. So hang on now, Maida. I'm putting you on speaker. If I can get this thing to dismiss. Why won't it? There we go. Okay, Maida, you're on speaker now.
Yeah.
Hi. All right. There we go. All right, you're on speaker. I have, I'm so happy that you are able to call in this morning, and you are living in Hoffman Estates now, is it?
Yeah, correct.
All right. Now, just to give a little history to our listeners, Maida contacted me maybe a month ago, 5 weeks ago, and said, I wrote a book, and I would like to let you know about it, and maybe come and talk about it on your show. So, Maida sent me the book, which is a lovely memoir, and Maida, why did you feel compelled to write this book?
Well, for a couple of reasons. Just to have a history of me since I came to the United States, to leave to my children, because I'm the first and only member of my family here.
What?
And
you mean here in the States or here in Chicago?
In the States.
You were the first one coming out.
I'm the first one that came. And there's nobody left. I had one brother who lived in Chicago for his lifetime, and he passed away. And I'm the only one here. And I thought, you know, I know myself how my siblings and I, we're always rooting around for information on our ancestors. And I thought, well, Americans, my American grandchildren, great-grandchildren, will have my history.
Well, that's
without going too far.
That's a really generous gift that you've provided for your family. And
well, hope so.
Oh, absolutely, Maida. Now you have a bit of a different experience than many people. So where did you grow up, first of all? Let's start at the beginning.
All right. Well, I grew up in County Kerry. Place called Near Castle Island. Town that would be well known.
A town that would be well known or wouldn't be well known?
Is well known, because the buses all pass through Castle Island from Limerick to going over to Killarney or going to Cork even. They would be, if not going through the town itself, they'd be bypassing Castle Island.
I see.
So,
and you were one of how many?
11.
And what position were you in the family?
I was in right in the middle.
Right in the middle, but you were the first one to leave. How did that happen?
Well, the older ones had gone elsewhere. Actually, I was the first one that came overseas and stayed. You know, some of them stayed at home, but one of my sisters was already in London going through nursing. And my youngest sister also went over and did nursing in London. And my older brother, after I came, but I was the first one that crossed the Atlantic.
Wow.
Of them.
A lot of people then probably hopped over to England or to mainland Europe. Yeah,
yeah. A couple of them then went. My younger sister went to Canada with her husband and lived in Canada, in Toronto. And my older brother went. Both my older brother and my younger brother ended up in Canada. And so kind of, you know, we were spread out all over.
What year did you come here, Maida?
The end of 1952.
The end.
I arrived in Chicago, Houston. What was the station? Union Station.
Yeah.
From New York, and because I came over by boat, and then came on to Chicago a week before Christmas of 1952.
And how did you choose Chicago?
Well, I had a family, a kind of half cousin of my dad's. He wasn't a blood cousin, but he was a very well known. Your dad would have known him, I'd say, very well. Dan Russell.
Okay, my dad knew a lot of people, so that's entirely possible.
Oh yeah, I know. He would have known Dan Russell. Him and a few more of the guys ran McHenry Hall. When McHenry Hall was the dance hall.
Okay.
On Madison Street.
Then he may have known him.
He was tied in with my family. It's in the book.
Yeah.
And it's too long to go into now. But anyway, another friend of mine, a second cousin of mine, came over to Chicago in, I think it was April. And I asked her to write to me and let me know how she liked it and what she was doing and everything. So when I got her letter, it was such a surprise that she had met this man. And when he found out where she came from, he asked if she knew my family.
That's
and
something.
She said, of course I do. She was actually a second cousin of mine, second or third cousin of mine. And he told her, he said, if any of them want to come to Chicago, just tell them, I'll bring them.
Really? So he was willing to sponsor folks? Sponsor.
He was.
Okay. Wow.
He had sponsored a lot. You know, back then they all sponsored so many.
Mm-hmm.
And helped bring them over and house them and, you know, fed them and got jobs.
Yeah.
Right away, the first day after that New Year's Day, I was down in Sears Roebuck.
No kidding.
My first job. Yeah.
On Holman Avenue.
Yes.
My mother worked there for 25 years, so yes, I'm familiar with the place.
Look at
all those connections we have, Maida. Isn't that something?
Yeah, it was.
So you came over, but you came over with not just willing to work, but you also are a very, very well-known musician. And now I'm going to hand you over to Richie. Richie Piggott wrote a really beautiful book called "Cry of a People Gone." It is being presented. Tell the people when. You got to come closer to the mic, though.
Hi, Maida. It's great. It's absolutely great to talk to you. You're one person I was always trying to reach. My name is Richie Piggott. I'm originally from Ireland. Both of my parents were from Kerry. Yes, my mother was a Flannery from Dingle, so I'm related to half the town and the town of Dingle, because they were all fishermen and musicians.
Right.
I'm very much involved in the marching band, so all the drums and fifes and flutes and so on. And my father was from the next peninsula down, your peninsula. He was Johnny Piggott. He was from a little place called Dukes, just outside Glen Bay. He was an accordion player. He played, like yourself, an awful lot of slides and polkas.
Yes, yes.
And they moved to Cork, and all of the family were born in Cork, in Cove, actually. So I'm sure you left in 52. I'm sure you left from Cove. Yeah.
I did, yes.
Yeah, well, that's where we were all born. I'm from a big family. I'm one of nine. You were one of 11. But I was like you. I was right in the middle as well.
Yeah.
And lots of music in the house, you can imagine. And you might know of my brother Charlie. He formed the group De Donnan with Frankie Gannon.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, that's my brother. But I was always more interested. I didn't play music, but I was always interested in the history of music, and you know, where people got the tunes and how they were taught. I started collecting an awful lot of books and manuscripts on Irish music, and in 1997 I moved from Ireland to Chicago. I'm a scientist by training, and I work in the food industry. I actually work for the Kerry Group, you know, Kerry Co-op.
Yes.
So I work for the Kerry Group here now in Chicago, and about 10 years ago I visited a pub in the south side called Lanigan's. Are you familiar with Lanigan's?
Yes, yeah. I was there a couple of times, yeah.
Okay, well, I went to Lanigan's one night and I met a group of musicians, and I'm sure you know them all. People like Kevin Henry and Maliki Tawi, Joe O'Shea, all of that group. And they weren't playing for any audience. I was only one of, I think, four people listening to them. But they were there. They were just playing for themselves. But I was just amazed by what was going on, because they were playing beautiful music, and then someone recited a poem, or someone wrote a song, or sang a song, I mean, or someone told a story. And I was just really blown away by the whole evening, you know. So, and I was told that they do that every Sunday night just for themselves. So I went I went down the next Sunday, and I asked each of them individually, would they mind if I interview them about their lives, you know, where they came from, how did they learn the music, when did they come to Chicago, and so on. And initially they were a bit reluctant. They were like saying, well, who'd be interested in me? And I said, well, I am, you know, I just really wanted to, at that time I had no intention of writing a book. A book never entered my head. I was just keen to document these guys, you know. So they all agreed eventually. So I started meeting them in their homes, interviewing them. And then two things happened. One was they started talking about other musicians that weren't playing in the pub, but also came. They all came after the war. They all came, like yourself, late 40s and early 50s. And they started introducing me to other peers of theirs who played music. People like, you know, Tommy Sheehan. Tom O'Malley up in the north side, Pat McPartland, all of those people. So I started reaching out and interviewing all of those people as well. And then the other thing that happened was, as I was interviewing them, they kept mentioning the musicians who were playing in Chicago in the late 40s and early 50s when they came over. And you mentioned McHenry Hall, and that at that time that was one of the big centers in the late 40s and early 50s. And people were playing there like Eleanor Neary and Johnny McGreevy.
She would know better than you, I would say.
So so at that time, obviously, they were, for me, they were all passed, they had all died, but I started tracking down their families. So I started interviewing Johnny McGreevy's family and Eleanor Neary's family and so on. So about this was going on now for the last 10 years, and about 3 years ago someone said to me, you know, I should write a book. So I started putting it together in the form of a book, and I've just literally, the book has just come out, and I called it Cry of a People Gone, because it's a line from a beautiful poem that was written for Michael Russell. I'm sure you remember Michael Russell from County Clare, great tin whistle player. And it's a beautiful poem, and the last line was "Cry of a People Gone," and I thought that that fitted the book beautifully, you know. So, so that's what I call the book, and I've just released it. I launched it here in Chicago over the last 2 weeks, and in Lanigan's. I started in Lanigan's because I just wanted to go full circle, really, and and just for sentimental reasons, that's where it all started. So I launched it there, and then the following week I launched it in Chief O'Neill's. And I'm just getting ready to
you're invited back to Ireland,
to travel to Ireland, and I'll be launching it in Dublin actually at the end of this week, next Thursday the 27th of October. I'll be launching it in Dublin. So I definitely want to
you're in there
I definitely want to meet you, because I want to give you a copy of the book, Maida.
Yes. Well, and I'll give you, we'll exchange.
Absolutely. And I'm really looking forward to reading your book.
A fair exchange, right?
I brought the book along with me, so everybody who's in studio here has been paging through it. Your pictures are just glorious in that book. Your pictures are just beautiful. Now, as I said, you came over with your fiddle, right? You're a fiddle player.
Yes.
Was it your whole family, was everybody musical or just you?
Well, they all love music. I'm the only one who played the fiddle. My dad used to play concertina. And then a couple of my brothers are good on guitars, of course, and one is good on piano. They all sing, and you know, we used to make our own fun, you know, with singing old songs. And I don't know if you were ever Richie on the Rand. Did you ever go?
Many times. In fact, I made a film of the Rand in 2018. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
This
fellow is a Renaissance man. He's a scientist. He's interested in all the arts. It's a little bit crazy, but just like yourself, he's very, very talented in the things he's done.
I'll be able to share that film with you, Maida, because as I said earlier, you know, like my grandfather and all my uncles, they were all in the marching band. So every 26th of December, we were out marching on the Rand's Day. And then, 6 o'clock, St. Patrick's morning, we marched around the town and up the church. And New Year's Eve, we marched around Dingle to march out the old year and in the new year. So I'm very, very familiar with the marching bands. I was going to ask you, if you don't mind, because I know you were taught by Padraig, the great Padraig O'Keefe. And could you give us some memories you have of being taught by Padraig O'Keefe?
Was he just a local fellow?
Oh, he was the traveling master.
So he traveled around from place to place, did he? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you become a student? Because I have a feeling that you had to actually exhibit some talent even before he'd take you on if he was a master, right?
All right. Well, you know, know what? He didn't consider himself a master.
Well, who does?
By any means, you know, but he was. But I had started, we had a neighbor who I have, it's all in the book. I had a neighbor, Jim Sullivan was his name. And my mom asked him to come and play because she knew he played the fiddle. And he came and started playing. He'd come after the cows every evening and he'd bring his fiddle and he'd sit and play. And I was around 10-ish, I'd say, around that time. And he said he had, I stand beside him, you know, and I was taking it all in. And he said, here, Gedeline, you want to try it? You want to try it? And so I tried it, and he played the dawning of the day for me, and then I played back the dawning of the day to him.
Really? And you just picked up the fiddle?
Yeah. I could pick it up. I mean, it was scratchy, of course. It was scratchy.
I know, but you still did it. You still managed to handle the tune. That's amazing.
God given.
That was the start of it. I could play a lot of stuff, you know, by ear. We had a lot of old tunes.
Right.
And I would play, and I said, you know, my first instrument was outside of my mouth was a comb.
Okay, yeah.
A hair comb with a piece of newspaper.
Newspaper over it, yeah.
Yes, and I played that far. We had a dancing teacher used to come to the house. He was a local man too.
Right.
And he would give, a lovely dancer, he'd give dancing lessons. And, you know, with having no music, I was the one on the comb.
Right.
Playing for the reels and jigs and whatever.
On the comb. I know, but you two are talking like everybody knows this. Everybody does not know this. I just want to, this is the comb as an instrument. I mean, you used what you had around, I guess, but.
Oh, it is.
Wow, it's amazing.
It is indeed.
What was the dancing teacher's name, Maida?
Tom Sweeney.
And he was a local as well, was he?
Tom Sweeney, was a local, yes.
Yeah. So tell us how then, so you demonstrated this God-given talent on the fiddle, right?
Yes.
And how did the fiddle master, what was his name, sorry?
Padraig O'Keefe.
How did he learn of you, and how did your lessons begin with him?
Yeah, well, my mother found out about him. He would come to Castle Island, he'd come to the town, you know, on his way from here to there, he traveled all over, and she sent word to him, would he come back to the house, and I mean, which was miles away from 5 miles or 6 miles.
Right.
You know, and he walked.
He didn't have a bike.
Oh,
okay.
He didn't have even a bike.
No, wow.
Yeah, the bike gave out on him way before this time. And he walked everywhere. And he usually left a pub on his way to whatever house. Because he went to the towns and he'd go in the pub, and that's where he met people.
Sure.
And they'd all give him the pint.
Yeah.
And he'd play, you know, away in the pub for the whole time he was in there.
Sure.
So anyway, he came and he started writing music for me the very first day. And from there, and here I am.
And did he teach you how to read music, Maida, or did you know that already?
Yeah.
Well, she don't learn how to read music just by yourself. You have to be taught.
But I was wondering if he taught her or someone else.
Or if she taught herself. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
I forget, did I know music at that time? I probably didn't. But he started me on the number method.
Yeah, he had his own method, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, so the finger down, open bone. Finger down, he called it.
Yeah.
And it was all little numbers. You know, he'd, and from just a piece of school paper,
right.
He would draw the lines, he would make his sheet of music, draw the lines, and then write it out.
So
fascinating.
You knew the notes, but you didn't know you knew the sound of the notes, but then you had to learn corresponded to the written note. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Well,
you because you were a savant. Yeah.
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 It's a. You'd have to watch. You had to follow the piece of paper. Follow his writing, and you. He taught me where to put this finger down, and then put the other finger down. And open bow was no finger. You know, quite interesting. I still have a couple of pieces written by him in the number. Yes.
Did you know, or did you ever meet his sister Nora, Mrs. Carmody?
I never met Nora.
Nora, no.
Listen, she was in Boston. I think, was she? One of them was in Boston, always.
I think you're right. One of the family were in Boston, but no, Nora stayed in Kerry.
Oh, did she?
She was a very nice concertina player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were all players.
They were.
The girls, anyway.
Yeah.
He had another sister, Bina.
That's right.
And Bina was a lovely, she could play the fiddle or the concertina.
Right.
Yeah,
they were a fantastic family.
Yeah.
So the opportunity came to the States, arrived when you were, I don't know, how old were you? How old were you when you came out here? Do you mind saying?
Well, I celebrated my 19th birthday in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, so you were 19 years old. Yeah.
On my way over, I was 19 years old.
And had you,
I don't care.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't care if you do the math. It's all right. It doesn't make any difference.
Thank you. At home now, were you employed or were you traveling around playing music? What were you doing with your music in Ireland?
With my music? I played with the Skartiglin Cayley Band.
Wow.
For just a couple of years while I was going to high school in Castle Island.
And can you remember the other members of that band who played in that band?
Richie's asking a lot of you, Maida. It's all right. If you don't remember, don't worry.
The only one I can remember now was Johnny Reedy. Johnny Reedy, who was the uncle of Johnny Reedy, who became famous with his music.
Yes, yeah.
And the tailor, you know, you wouldn't know him by the real name. The tailor was one of them.
Right.
And the rest of them, you know, I knew their names at the time, of course, but I have them all forgotten.
I know.
Their names, yeah.
That's all right. And so you were traveling around.
I don't think there's any of them living, of course.
Oh, they're, probably not.
They're descendants.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yeah, they were all older than me at the time anyway, so.
Yeah.
So you were you traveling around Ireland with them or just in a regional area?
No, just local. Oh. We went to, you know, local Cayley dances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We played for Cayley dances. And then I played with a regular band. They were from Castle Island. It was a family of McGailies. They were a lovely brass band.
Brass band?
And a brass band, and I was with them more singing. When the Cayley dance came up,
right.
The Siege of Innes, you know, the Stack of Barley.
Yeah,
I played that by myself on my fiddle.
Right,
solo.
I played for them.
Yeah,
solo. Yeah.
And that, but you were singing.
I probably had drums to my back, but
right.
Yeah.
But
right.
That was it.
But
yeah.
That was it. So when did you start singing, or was that something that you'd all?
And this was a very short time, you know. That was for a very short time. I sang from the time I was 3 years old.
I see.
Wow.
And you did receive some formal instruction, though.
No.
You never did.
Never. Did. Only my. Maybe if you call it instruction, which it was good, my aunt, one of my aunts was a teacher in the school that I went to.
Right.
And she was our music teacher.
Yeah.
So I'm in a small little country school, two-room school, you know. But after I left high school, I got a job in Dublin in a grocery store so that I could get voice lessons.
Mm. Oh, really?
That was my reason for going there. I mean, there was no jobs at all around my own place.
Mm-hmm. Which is why everybody left. Yeah.
Which is why. And we had no training. The first typewriter in the high school that I went to came in the year after I left.
Wow.
Home.
So we didn't even have typing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Like, you could have gone to a typist, you could have paid for typing lessons, but, you know,
yeah,
out of a farm, we didn't have...
Right.
We didn't have the money to
didn't
pay
have the resources.
For,
yeah.
Right. For so you, them. And I suppose it wasn't to be.
You said...
But anyway...
You went to Dublin.
I got a few voice lessons in Dublin.
So you did do that, okay.
And everything was going great. No, just for... I was only there about a year in
yeah.
that in 18. That store.
Yeah, okay.
And they went bankrupt.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they went bankrupt. And it was just Easter time of that year now that I came over.
I see.
Easter time, and I decided, well, it's Easter now, I might as well go home. So I went home, and for that summer, I worked with my dad in the fields, and because my two older brothers were gone. And so then that's when my whole story changed. And I got the invite to come to Chicago, and I thought about it for maybe half a minute. And
Maida, how was it that was it you in particular that was invited to come, or any member of the family?
Any member of the family.
And
oh
you,
yeah.
But you were the one that put up your hand.
I was there, doing nothing, only out in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and I mean, and my mother wouldn't let me stay home anyway.
She wouldn't let you
stay
home.
She wanted all of us to go and be something.
Did she?
Do something.
Powerful Irish women, I swear to God. So powerful. It must have been so hard for her to see all of her children leave, but
she tried to make
it. Yeah.
She tried to make a nun out of me.
Oh, God.
Oh, really?
Earlier.
I'm glad she didn't succeed.
Yeah, that would have been terrible.
That didn't work.
Well.
But she would have had all of us girls. We had five girls in the family. She would have all of us nuns and all the boys priests.
Oh, Lord.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, well. I'm glad that changed, and that you took the opportunity and you came here to Chicago. Now, when you arrived, you're 19 years old. You were able to get housing, get a job. And when did the music come back? Or was it always something
that was... Well, of course, I brought my old fiddle with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And actually, wait a while now, the guy, the people that I came to, their family, well, her sister was a sister to Cuz Tehan's wife.
A sister to Cuz Tehan's wife.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, Cuz came around, and another guy was Ted Sullivan, who played a fiddle also. And they started coming over to Russell's house, and, you know, we would sit around and talk about the music and play and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I started, because Cuz came from Padraig O'Keefe's townland.
That's right.
Yeah, and of course he was excited about getting someone that knew Padraig, and I had a good bit of Padraig's music with me.
Yeah,
I gave it. I loaned it to someone and never got it back.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was so sad.
Yeah.
Because, but anyway, I got on then with Cuz, and then of course he introduced me to other people, and right away, a couple of months after I came, I went on the Jack Hegarty program.
Right.
And I was with them for probably a good year.
What do you mean you were
not
helping?
More. And I sang. I was one of the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, there was only two of us, John O'Shea and myself.
Right.
Yeah, John was from Dingle.
Oh, was he?
Yes, John O'Shea.
Yeah.
Lovely singer. He's a lovely singer. Yeah.
And then of course yourself and Cuz and Una Madlu and
And Mary McDonough,
You formed a band there.
We did, yeah. Kind of piece by piece we put it together.
Right.
And what was the band?
Did you have a name?
It was Cuz and Friends.
Cuz and Friends, yeah. Cuz Tehan
and
Friends.
Yeah. Cuz and Friends.
Yeah.
And of course, loads of people knew Cuz because he played at McHenry Hall.
That's right.
He played accordion at the time with the band that played there, Tom Tracy.
That's right.
Tom Tracy's band.
Yeah.
Was the name of it, Eleanor Keane on the piano.
Yeah. Tim Gaheen from Dingle.
Cool.
Tim, do you remember Tim Gaheen?
Oh, Gaheen, yes, yeah. Yes. Yes.
And, who else was there?
And then Cook on the drums.
Yeah, Johnny Cook. Drummer, yeah.
So right.
You formed
yes.
this band and were you busy, pretty busy traveling around the area? And did you go to feshes and festivals? And
I did. I went to, forget what the name of the park was. It was an annual thing and it was Pat Roach.
Ah, okay.
Pat Roach, that was Pilsen Park.
Pilsen Park?
What was it?
Pilsen Park?
Pilsen, oh, yeah. it probably was Pilsen, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, word got around, and then some of the priests used to have fundraisers. They'd have a concert.
Oh, that's right. The Columban Fathers.
Once or twice a year, the Columban Fathers, and there's other fathers.
That's right.
And I would always be one of them included in their concert.
Yeah. And do you remember when Paddy Cronin came in?
Paddy Cronin. Oh, Paddy Cronin.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. He, I only met that man once.
Right.
Oh, he was a lovely player. He was the closest sound to Padraig O'Keefe of all the fiddlers.
Yeah, amazing player.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in... I think he was in Boston for most of his life,
yeah,
wasn't
he?
He
was only 4 years here, but he spent most of his life in Boston, you're right.
Yeah. And then he ended up going back home, I think,
to retire.
Yeah.
He died back there, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when did you start writing your own music, Maida?
Bits and pieces, always. I never wrote, only now these later couple of years, I wrote a few little polkas and a few polkas of my own and one or two slides, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the songs?
But the songs, I started, the first song I ever wrote was, I think it was... My parents died in 1979, and it was shortly after that I wrote The Irish Country Girl. It was my first song.
Mm.
And from there, you know, I mean, it was strange. I never thought, probably like yourself, Richie, that you never think you're going to write a book. I never thought I was going to write a song.
Yeah.
But there it was, all in my head at one time, and it had to come out.
Exactly. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So,
Have you written many songs now?
She has, yeah. She's written many songs.
I have. Yeah, I have an album.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I only made one album, and the only reason I made it was because they were my own, most of my own compositions, and I wanted to just have them on record.
Maida, is that available anywhere? Or is it only on a LP?
It's only on the LP. They can always be changed, I think.
Yes.
Because you know what? I have two boxes of them.
Richie's going to go to your house, and he is going to get a record, and he is going to bring it to me, and I will transfer it for you.
I'll do it.
All right. It would be great.
Yeah.
But you know what? I heard they're coming back.
Well, they are. It's a very niche crowd. I mean, not everybody is going to run out and get a record player. In fact, I had to teach my other engineer here how to use a record player. But it is a niche thing, and they're coming back. You know, it's like an interest, but it's more to have your music out for everybody. I think you really need to have it digitized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rich will come by and get your records because he lives near you.
I live very close to you, mate. I'm out in St. Charles, so I'll definitely meet up with you.
Oh my goodness, you're only down the road.
That's all. I'll definitely meet up with you. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great. So get my phone number from Siobhan there.
Yeah. I will. Don't
I
worry.
Have it.
I will.
Yes.
Maida, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. And because we're doing this live stream on YouTube, we were able to do a much longer a much longer interview, which is marvelous. And this, I'm going to copy this and I'll send it to you. Listen, though, John Devitt's here from Gaelic Park, and he said, ask Maida if she knew Maisie Mitchell.
Yes. Oh, and Maisie was one of the pianists on the Jack Hegarty program.
Yeah.
And they'd alternate her and Mary McDonough.
And this is a...
Maisie was lovely.
The Hegarty Show, this Hegarty Show on the radio?
Yeah.
The first one, I know, but
yeah. So he had live musicians up here performing. I didn't know. We did,
the whole band.
Okay, all right. Yeah, my mother and father didn't arrive in Chicago until 1967.
Oh, they were. Much earlier radio.
Yeah, so they would. He would have only been spinning records at that stage. Yeah.
Maida, probably. Were you on with PJ Concannon?
Oh, I was, yeah. And I'd forgotten all about him, and I was thinking of the programs that I was on.
Yeah.
And he was one of them. He was such a character.
I heard all about him. You'll read about him in the book as well.
I'm going to bring
you a copy of the book. So
he's going to come and visit you. He's going to get that LP, so make sure you have a couple for him. And he's going to give you a signed copy of his book, and he's going to show you where you are in the book.
I hope it'll bring happy memories to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
Maida. Thank you, I'm sure.
Listen, thanks a million. We'll be chatting with you again, sometime.
Okay.
But I appreciate the generosity of your time, and you have such a fascinating story, and I'd love to even hear more of it, and we will. But as I said, it's been 40 minutes now that we've been talking.
Yeah. And one last thing. You know, my publisher has been dragging his heels because he's been sick.
Oh.
I think he's a rather sick man right now, too.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But he did call me back this morning because I just wanted to know, like, a time frame as to when my book would be coming out on Amazon.
All right.
And it'll be available everywhere on Amazon.
And so the name of the book, because we haven't even mentioned the name of the book. We've been very, very remiss here. And the name of your book is Grandma, Tell the Story. And this is by, we've been talking to Maida McQuinn Shugru, who is originally from Kerry and has a fascinating life history, life story, that she has created this memoir full of marvelous photos and stories and even some music in there. Maida, again, thank you so much for your time. And listen, when this comes out for real, we'll have you back on and chat more about it, okay?
Okay, Siobhan. Thanks so much.
Maida. I'll be in touch. Yeah. Keep well.
Okay, Richie. Be in touch. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Maida. Wonderful. Thank you.
It's been marvelous having you. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So that was, folks, we're still broadcasting. That was Maida McQuinn Shugru, and a fascinating story.
You have to do your commercial.
My commercials. You know what? I think what I'll do is when we're back on there, I'll just do them double.
Okay.
That's what I'll do. I think that's our best thing to do. Now I have Richie here who we talked a little bit about your book, and you told Maida about your book that's coming out.
Yeah.
While we're doing a combo toward a sort of thing.
Oh, fantastic. I think it was great to get her on.
Yeah. She's marvelous.
Yeah.
But Richie, I met Richie last week at the Irish Books, Arts and Music Weekend at the Irish American Heritage Center.
That's right.
And I started doing these interviews with some of the talent that are there. And I have some great audio of Richie and a few other authors. But I said to Richie, it was my last interview of the day, or almost my last interview. I said, now that I've met you, you have to come on the show.
And I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
You have, even though it hasn't
and
been a show.
You've been so flexible. talk about action, you know, on your feet. You're incredible.
Aren't I, though?
Incredible.
Just amazing.
Incredible.
So bring John, would you mind handing that copy of that book over here? So what we've got here, we just want to show the thickness of this. Since we're on audio, video anyway.
Here's the book.
There it is. Look at this. It's like the size of a coffee table book.
410 pages.
and there's over 500 photographs, and that was one of the beauties of during my interviews. I was getting so many, not alone photographs, but recordings.
People were very, talk about, very John, Maida was very generous with your time. Move in closer to the microphone.
Extremely generous with not alone their time, but everything they had.
Now tell me, because I already have this on the other interview that we did, because this is my second interview talking to Richie.
Sure.
But you said you knew the importance of Chief O'Neill to the city of Chicago.
Correct.
However, Chief O'Neill was not a standalone fellow by recording the music or even playing the music. He had partners.
Oh, yes. He had partners. And he was a musician himself.
Of course, yeah.
He was a good musician.
He didn't write music, though.
He played a flute, but he couldn't write music. He obviously, it was he who collected
the
music.
He made an anthology, a giant anthology of Irish music. And that's why we're so grateful to Chief O'Neill.
Exactly.
However,
he had two helpers. Actually transcribed the music, who could write out the music.
So the story goes, the Chief O'Neill, they call him Chief because he was chief of police.
He was the chief. Yeah.
And he would hear about these musicians that had come over, maybe they were new arrivals or whatever. And a lot of times, and I think everybody knows this probably, but I'll just restate, when people come to the States, what they do is they try to become more American and they leave behind their past. Mm-hmm. They leave behind their own culture because they're trying to embrace the American culture.
True.
They're trying to become one with being an American. So before that happened, and Irish music was really not in favor, would you say? Mm-hmm. A lot of people diddly, 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 diddly.
Yeah.
Ugh, they dismiss it. It's nothing. It's a folk music with derision. Chief O'Neill heard about these musicians that were out there, and they were working full-time jobs just like Maida was, uh-huh. and maybe just playing a little bit on the side or whatever, and he'd go to them and he'd ask them to play, and then he'd have
James, it was originally James O'Neill, it was James O'Neill,
no relation.
O'Neill, and none of them were related to each other.
Right.
So James O'Neill first worked with him, and his first book was The Music of Ireland, 1903,
mm-hmm.
and then he put out 1001 Tunes, so they brought out, I think, three, maybe four books together. Francis O'Neill and James O'Neill, and then a new young girl called Selena O'Neill. Who was also
Have you ever heard of Selena O'Neill, John Devitt?
Since I looked at the book now.
Just because of the book.
From the book.
Yeah. But had you ever heard of her before?
Never heard of Selena.
Had you ever heard of Selena O'Neill before?
O'Neill is synonymous with Chicago.
Had you ever heard of Selena O'Neill before?
No.
Connect with Chief O'Neill. So,
no.
Richie.
Yeah, so
explain.
Selena was a wonderful musician. She was born here in Chicago. She was born in 1893 in Bridgeport. Both of her parents were from Ireland. Her father was from Kerry.
She was an Irish-American.
Her mother was from Roscommon, Corbo in Roscommon. She was born in 1893. She went to... her father was a good musician, so she started learning from her father. Then she started learning from the nuns when she was going to the convent in the school. And then she went straight into Chicago Music College, and she got a degree in music.
Really?
How rare was that at the time? It was very rare. She was very proficient.
Not only just going to college, being a girl going to college, and studying music.
Yeah.
All those three things.
Exactly. And she was
the unholy trinity, if you will.
Excellent on fiddle and piano. She could play fiddle and piano. And she could read and write music, obviously. So she started working with O'Neill for his last number of books.
Did he recruit her, or did he just find out?
No, he knew because she was playing in the Feshes, and
he was great at finding these very talented musicians.
So she worked very closely with him.
But we never hear of her.
Until
Richie.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, she's mentioned, but only mentioned.
Richie, come on. She was delegated to the unimportant,
right.
She was.
So I decided to, when I was writing this book, I could not mention Francis O'Neill, because everyone knows Francis O'Neill and James O'Neill, but I didn't want to go too much into them because so much was known of them. But I knew that very little was known of Selena, so I've traced her family. And found her family.
You traced
here.
Her family.
Yeah, her great grand nephew is who I found.
Okay.
And I told him what I was doing and said, could I meet him? And I couldn't believe it when I walked into his house. It was almost like an altar to Selena. There were the O'Neill books, there was her fiddle, there was all sorts of, I couldn't believe it. And he, again, like all the others, he was extremely generous. He was giving me photographs of her. I mean, in the book, I have a photograph of her when she was 2 years of age, when she was in elementary school.
Well, thank God somebody kept documentation. You know, her family, valued her talent, and they just said, well, this is, you know, we want to memorialize her for ourselves.
Right.
But then somebody comes along and says, hey, what about this fantastic musician? They're like,
yeah. So that's where I start with, and then I go from there in the 20s.
Richie, what a beautiful gift this has been to the city of Chicago. Irish musicians, Irish musicians in Chicago, 1920 to 2020. And would you say the moniker that Chicago is the epicenter of traditional music in North America?
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Even to today.
Yes, I know.
Absolutely.
Today.
I mean, look who you have today. We have Jimmy Keane, Liz,
Carol,
Marty Fahey, John Williams. They're known
Pauline Keneally.
All over the world.
Yeah.
Of course, we appreciate it all over the world more than our people.
Yeah, that's the truth.
And then there's underneath them, there's a whole team of younger acts coming up.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
At the Heritage Center during IBAM, the Irish Academy of Irish Music was playing. Phenomenal.
And by the way, going back to Selena, she started teaching music after she got her degrees and was playing.
So she passed it along.
And she passed
it. So who did she teach it?
She passed.
Who did she teach that we would know?
Well, you wouldn't know any of them, but one of her favorite students became a nun. Sister Marguerite was her name. I can't remember the actual.
Her baptismal name.
Yes, but Sister Marguerite, and she was her favorite. And the family of Sister Margaret, what's her name, Selena, gave Sister Margaret her hop fiddle, the fiddle that she played all her life.
Did she really?
And today, that's what reminded me of it, in the Academy of Irish Music.
Yeah.
One of the young girls playing, her name is Ciara Byrne, she is playing Selena's fiddle. So Selena's fiddle is still...
I just got chills.
Selena's fiddle is still playing music in Chicago today.
Full circle.
Yeah, they gave it to her, not full time, but just
to use.
This, what good is it up on the mantelpiece?
Yeah.
Well, someone can use it. So that young girl is there, and she was playing in IBAM.
Okay, so I actually have a video of that played because I took a video, a terrible video, but I took a video of it.
Her name is Ciara Byrne, and she has that fiddle now. And she knows it's Selena's.
Yeah. Richie, as I mentioned earlier, is a scientist.
Yes, for my sins.
What did you get your degrees in? Because, again, it's crazy. This guy, what did you achieve your degree?
Microbiology.
Microbiology and what's this other little thing?
Molecular biology.
Molecular biology. Oh, yeah.
Genetics.
So you came to this love of music naturally, you said. Not that you yourself are a musician.
No.
But you've been compiling and collecting and fascinated since you were a little guy.
Correct.
Amazing.
I'll be doing it. And I should say as well that during the 10 years that I've
researched, it took 10 years to get this book together.
They gave me the musicians and the families of the musicians who had passed on. They gave me an awful lot of, as I said, recordings, photographs, books, manuscripts, and I have all of that now as an archive, and I've created a website, and the website is my name, richiepigott.com, and I am about to upload that complete archive up onto the website and just share it with anyone who's
interested. Share it with the world.
Yeah.
Share it with the world. Richie, thanks a million for being here today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Crazy morning you came, but there you go.
It was exciting.
It was exciting. Yeah. I'm so happy that you have made it connected now. A phenomenal book, and good luck on your travels next week.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations on this being recognized in the country of Ireland as a very great, important work that you've created.
Thank you very much. And thank you for connecting me with Maida.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another great connection.
I know. I'm telling you, bring her a book and bring me back that LP and I'll
I will, of course.
I'll digitize it for you. Miss Bridget's leaving now.
Yeah.
Because we've been on the air for a long time. Oh my gosh, it's 1 o'clock. Look at that.
Right.
It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Our show is officially over. The one that's been playing, I don't know.
Oh.
But anyway, we're still playing. All right, I have Paul Dowling here. Yeah, come over here, Bridget.
Okay.
Take off your mask.
I have a few local announcements.
All right, you go ahead. Do the announcements. You know, the
The Galway Fellowship Club is having their dance. I think it's Friday. I wonder if it's sold out because they didn't send anybody up here.
28th, isn't it?
That's this week.
Yeah, it was tonight.
But today is the 20th. Don't drive me crazy. Today's the 22nd. It's the Friday the 28th. So did you get calls? Is that what happened? So normally for those people who are just tuning in and maybe have never heard of us before, we have a live radio broadcast on Saturday mornings. It's been around since 1971. My dad started the broadcast way back then. We've been on the air continuously since then. Of course, can't stop that. That's why we're broadcasting live right now. And there's the station that we've been broadcasting from was recently purchased, and honestly, it's been nothing but trouble with the new owners. It really hasn't. So I walked in this morning, and I told you earlier what happened in the broadcast. But I'm happy to be out in the big wide world, and we do hope that you find this entertaining. And this is really how our broadcast goes on a Saturday. It's we do know we have some visitors coming, and we do a bit of research on it. But primarily, the interview process is one where we have a chat.
Sure.
And that's our favorite thing in the world. We find out more about the people that we're interviewing just through a chat. I don't like the formal interview process. Of course, the who, what, why, when is important to answer, but the person that you're interviewing is the fascinating part.
Yeah, but I feel that the people need to know what's going on in the community.
Well, you go ahead.
And this is their only source.
Oh, a lot of them,
radio
yes,
show.
Yes, yes.
You know. Well, anyway, true. Save the date. The dance you have all been waiting for. It's the Victorious Party Pierce's Gaelic Football Club will hold their 30th annual dinner dance on Saturday, December the 3rd at the Fountain Blue in Displains. More information to follow. But in the meantime, call Stephen Feeney for more information at 224-817-8207. And this morning we lead Tommy Cummins, a native of Ballyhonus, Ballinare, County Mayo. He is being buried from St. Tarsus's. And after 11:30 Mass, condolences to his wife Peggy and all his family and friends. And we'll talk more about Tommy next week. Hope Margaret is having a great vacation here. She was here for Judy Dunleavy's granddaughter's wedding last week. So I hope she's still here and enjoying herself. Congratulations to the Mayo Association for a wonderful annual dance last Saturday night. It was a great night, and congratulations to all who was involved. So on Sunday, December the 4th, they're looking forward to the Christmas party at Biagio's, and that's on Sunday, December the 4th, and that's 4242 North Central Avenue in Chicago. Thank you to Pat O'Malley for your huge big package of goodies that I received during the week. My family was so excited for all the Blackhawk paraphernalia and the Derry sisters. Love it. Thank you so much, Pat. And Bon Voyage last night to Bridie from Lahorden, who was here visiting Mary and Frank Duffy. Now, Mary and Frank Duffy was voted a Volunteer of the Year at the banquet at the Irish American Heritage Center last week. And it was so nice to see Bridie and her making 3.5 weeks vacation with her sister. That was lovely. And that's what I have for now.
Thank you so much. Did a lot of people call in?
No, not one.
Not one because we weren't there to give out the radio.
Right. I watched the radio, though.
You watched the phone. Yeah, you did.
So let me know about next Saturday.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, who knows what's going on. Yeah, we'll keep everybody informed. We try to keep everybody informed.
All right.
All right, love.
All right.
You've got to go babysit those babies.
Yes.
All right. Now, in real time, it is 1:05. Our show would have been over 5 minutes ago. The really good thing about YouTube is we have no constraints in time.
Good.
Right?
That's excellent.
well, we need some limits somewhere, otherwise we'll never stop talking.
Music in the background.
Well, yeah, this is a live broadcast right now, and I guess I could rebroadcast. I don't know how this works, but we'll figure it out. I have very technologically minded children, happily, and I have a daughter who's a film student, so...
But how is Rory doing with his piano?
Roy's doing great with this piano.
Good.
Thank you very much for asking.
Enjoy.
All right, he played Danny Boy last night. He just picked it out.
Really?
Yeah. All right, I have my friend Paul Dowling here this morning. God bless, Bridget.
This afternoon.
Oh, God, this afternoon. Very patient man. You have been having a terrible time, I know. You've been having a terrible time, right?
I learned a lot.
This guy just...
I read half of two books.
This fellow here that you're looking at via the video screen is Paul Dowling. He's a regular guest on our program, one of the most kindest people in Chicago, I think. How long have you been living here now? 10 years? No.
12, I'd say.
Is it 12 years?
12, maybe 13 almost.
Did you come out to work for Irish Community Services?
Yeah, I was out a couple of times. I did an internship out here, and then I worked a summer out here, but I moved out to work with ICS.
And you are a trained social worker. That's what your background is. We're just going over it for those people who are international who may not know you.
We don't know the local celebs like me and John here.
Well, Paul started out as in social work for Irish Community Services, and now he's executive director of Irish Community Services. So there you go. Tell us what's going on with you. And of course, Irish Community Services here in Chicago, what is their mission?
Serve, empower, and connect the Irish and Irish American community.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, why are you stealing my
clicky,
pen?
Clicky, clicky, clicky.
Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. And a lot of our programs, really, it's about keeping our community kind of vibrant and connected.
Connected. Mm-hmm. That's what this radio show is all about, too, making sure that everybody's connected, that people get the information that they need, want, and want to listen to, yeah? But you, Irish Community Services, is an organization that operates under the assumption that you can help everybody, from infants up to our most senior of citizens. And so the youngest ones, you provide resources such as Irish story time, things. You're doing that via YouTube, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And now that we're on the other side, let's hope, of this terrible pandemic we've all been living through, you're able to have in-person as well. Tell us about the in-person.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one of the programs I wanted to share with you this morning. So our toddler playgroup at the Heritage Center is back about 3 weeks ago. So we meet every Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. to 11:30. So that's for the youngest members of our community. So it's an opportunity for them to get together and play in a lot of different cultural ways. So our craft will often be something Irish. We'll work in
the language. You always work that in.
Yeah. Because
you are Irish community
right?
services, right?
Yeah. And then it's also an opportunity for the parents, grandparents, whoever the caregiver is, to come meet other folks.
Right, because it's not a drop-and-go program. I just like to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. People think they're going to drop their kid off and leave. No. This is not a babysitting service. This is a chance for your toddlers to socialize with others, hopefully learn accidentally about their Irish heritage, and then for the adults to connect with each other in a very positive way. And a lot of people are going through the same thing at the same time, especially if you're a young parent. So you share hacks and stories and everything about your kids. So that's marvelous. So that's the toddler playgroup, and that's back in session.
Yes.
And is that just at the Heritage
Center?
Just at
the Heritage Center.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday mornings, 10:30 to 11:30. And it's drop-in, so you don't need to register. You don't
you
need
just
to be there
show
for
up.
All of it.
Just come along?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that is in what room at the Heritage Center?
It's usually in 302.
302.
The door, the room right next to our office.
Okay. All right. And that's the little guys. Mm-hmm. And then for the middle people, I would say, you help folks get their Irish passport, mm-hmm. declare their Irish citizenship and all of that. And then for those who are here, who might be undocumented or what have you, mm-hmm. what do you do?
So the undocumented, it's tricky to work with the undocumented because really what they need is policy
a lot of help.
Change.
Yeah.
Well, they need policy change,
yes.
essentially.
Right.
Unless they're to maybe marry an American citizen, and even then it can be complicated.
Yeah, tricky, yeah.
But we do have legal clinics where people can access 30-minute consultations with immigration attorneys. So it's often a good jumping in point to explain their situation to a professional who might be able to
find a good way
to solve their issues, right? A very obvious one that people just don't know because they don't have a legal degree, right? And you have specialized immigration attorneys available.
Yes.
And it's a free of charge consultation, a 30-minute, I think, consultation. Yes. So what do you recommend people bring to that 30-minute consultation?
Well, it will depend on what they're... So we have folks... who are in a lot of different situations,
right.
So it wouldn't necessarily just be people who are undocumented.
Right.
So you're here on green cards and need to renew something.
Right.
You might be here on a particular type of visa and wondering about, can I renew this? Can I change to a different type of visa, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
Or travel, you know,
right.
I have this visa and I want to go here. And so that, it's quite varied, so it depends on what's going on. You can never bring too many things.
That's good to know.
You might need it all. But
expanding file folder, bring it.
Better to have it and not need it.
That's right.
As the old saying goes.
Exactly, but try to be organized and don't wait till the last minute to get it together.
Right.
So you get a 30-minute consultation with an immigration attorney for whatever your issue might be. And then you just kind of make that, you just introduce them to the process. Now, what about the citizenship classes?
Yes, and that's another thing I wanted to mention today because we are doing, we're back in person for this next round of classes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first time we've been back in person.
So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And it's down at Gaelic Park, actually. So we're going to do it in November over three successive Saturdays. The first session on the 5th is just an hour long and it's more of an overview info session. So for people who want to know more generally about US citizenship, if they're eligible, if they want to take the classes, that's a great starting off point.
What's the time commitment for the classes?
So the classes will take on be on the two subsequent Saturdays. So I think that's the 12th and the 19th.
Do you have to take a class to be a
No, you don't. So what we do is we just walk people through the process and through the form so they know what to expect. Yeah,
okay.
And then there's also a civics exam. So we do some preparation for that too.
Were you naturalized?
John? Yeah, I had to do the exam, yeah.
Did you have to do the exam?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you interviewed? I'm talking to John Devitt off camera
here. 1986. Yeah, I was interviewed, yeah. I done my interview in Toronto, actually. I had an immigration attorney because I came on a J-1 visa originally, and because you had to reproduce that paperwork, which I had long lost, tore up. Took some time. I was in limbo. But that was in the good old days when there wasn't as...
Right, it wasn't as
stringent. I travelled back and forth to Ireland.
Sure. It wasn't the same environment as it is now.
Yeah,
sure.
Funny story I'll share. When I went through Detroit on my way into the US, I had to present myself to an immigration officer. That was my first entry into the US as a US citizen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had to give a thumbprint. So the immigration officer, looking through my passport, saw the multiple entries. And those days, they had a sense of humor. And he said to me, "It looks like you've been waiting a while to give an immigration officer the finger."
Well,
sorry, Paul.
Poor Paul. He's like, "I've been here all morning." So it is a process. You do not have to take the classes, but they are helpful,
right?
Especially for learning what to expect, right, and how to handle questions that might be asked. And there's a written exam, and I believe there's an oral exam, right?
Yeah, yep.
And it's all about our government and how it works and the ins and outs and more information that I probably don't know myself, and I'm an American citizen. I took the Constitution test when I was in 8th grade. But, you know, so the classes are the first day is an overview.
Mm-hmm. On the 5th, and then on the 12th and 19th, we'll get into the process, what citizenship means, rights and responsibilities of citizens. Then we'll get into the application and then civics test preparation.
I see. Okay. All right. What else is going on with ICS?
That is a lot. What else is going on? We'll be at the bazaar as well, the Christmas, and maybe it's too early to talk about Christmas.
No, it's not.
Don't you see
all the Christmas decorations being put up right now?
Before Halloween.
Don't get me started, guys.
Yes.
Don't get me started. So we'll be there doing some kid activities with the Heritage Center.
Okay.
What else have we got going on?
The
senior
Christmas Bazaar at the Heritage Center is like December 12th or something like that. When is it?
I think it's the 4th.
Oh, is it the 4th?
December,
okay, yeah,
the 4th.
That makes sense. Earlier,
Yeah, and then senior groups are back up and running. So we're at the Heritage Center this Wednesday, and the following Wednesday we'll be down at Gaelic Park.
Let's pause there for a second. The senior groups... you do a lot of memory enrichment.
Yeah, that's kind of a different group that we have at the moment, but it's closed now, enrollment.
Oh.
So we have about 12 seniors.
So that's not a drop. We'll address that in just a second. But the senior group that you do is more of a social group then.
Yeah, so it's often, everything we do is social. Because that's like the bedrock of community.
Of course.
If you're not having a good time...
You're not going to come, for one thing.
What's the point?
Why would you go?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So we do a lot of educational programming. We do a lot of cultural programming.
With the senior group.
We drink a lot of tea.
Yeah.
We eat a lot of cookies.
Right. You might have John Devitt as a speaker one day who comes and talks about the genealogy.
Actually.
Next Wednesday week, I might just show up.
That's not
a bad idea. Yeah, yeah.
Look at this, the connections we're making. This is what we do here also. Mm-hmm. People come to the studio to talk about their own stuff, and then they meet other people who are in the studio, and they find out how they can help each other.
When you said tea and cookies, I'm on board.
Sold.
So it's just a lot of our shared Irish culture that you do.
A lot of musical performances. Mm-hmm. Sometimes watch some, film.
Yeah, some great stuff.
Yeah.
All right. And then the memory group you do is a different animal, and you said it's closed now, but I just want to let our listeners know this is a great gift to the Irish community because this memory group, it's not, it's again, really, it's really social, mm-hmm. right? It's all about being social. And what they do, what do you mm-hmm. do? Why don't you tell instead of me?
It's all very simple, really, but all based on research.
On research.
Yes.
From the Alzheimer's Association.
You
were partnering with them, mm-hmm. and you were partnering with other groups, mm-hmm. Not only Alzheimer's, but other groups as well. So this is based on research, what you do. So what do you do? Mm-hmm.
So what we have learned is the activities that they believe, because again, a lot of it, they're still researching. There's so much around memory loss that they don't
people
know.
People don't. Why isn't it better funded? I don't know. But anyway, we have Viagra, but no Alzheimer's cure. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So they do think there's a range of kind of activities that people can engage in that will either help prevent memory loss or... help prevent the progression.
Slow it down.
Yes.
Slow it down.
Exactly. And it's a lot of it's very simple but very powerful things. So like obviously being social, like the most important thing you can do for your brain is have a conversation with another person. There's a lot going on when you're doing that.
Here's the problem. So this is why your senior groups are important, because a lot of older folks are very isolated. They don't have family that stops in to see them. They might be living on their own. They have no way to get to one place or another. So that's where it begins, the isolation. And I think through COVID, all of us learned how important it is to be connected in some way to your community. So that's where it begins, the isolation. So it's all about socialization. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of, and then other things as well. Sensory stimulation, obviously, is great. Music, they're not sure why, but music is like super food for the brain.
Well, think about it. I can listen to a song from 1975 when I was just
lyrics.
A kid, and I know the lyrics. Have I thought about that song since 1975? No, I have not. But it plays on the radio, and I know every word of Hot Child in the City. Like, I know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I think physical exercise might be the other one. So we do a little bit of that as well.
So you do a little bit of physical
exercise? Yeah, like a lot of seated kind of aerobics.
And people follow along with that, more or less?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So we had all the different aspects of what they think is helpful for.
Right. Now, some people have contacted me saying, how do I find a job in the States? I'm applying for a visa, and I need the thing is, you need a job, a guaranteed job, before you actually get your visa, which is kind of a... talk about tricky circumstance, right? So do people call you frequently to get those connections?
A little bit. I mean, if they're looking specifically for work, we often would send them along to like the Ireland network.
Okay.
We don't do a lot of employment-based immigration.
But you, as you said, your connections are very important. Mm-hmm. So you work with other groups to meet needs. And that, so you're kind of like a clearinghouse of what's available for services, Irish services, mm-hmm. because of course you're friends with the consulate, so you know a lot of things about that. My God, thank God Sarah didn't come today.
Oh, no.
That would have been a tough one.
Get her next time.
Yeah, the Irish Consul General. That would have been fun. No, we're not on the air. We're on there.
We're streaming.
But we're not on there. We're streaming, baby. Paul, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming. I was so excited to see that you're going to be here. And I do love having a full studio. I'm sorry it's a bit different than we thought it would be or assumed it would be on a Saturday morning. But there you have it. That's just how that's just how it goes.
Thank you.
All right. John, do you have anything else for Gaelic Park?
No, there'll probably be 5 million hits on YouTube in the next week. You know?
Oh, yeah. All right.
Go viral.
All right. You've been listening to the Chicago Irish Radio, the O'Connor Show. Normally, we do have music playing as well. I couldn't figure that out. So we decided just to